Namaskritya Naramcheva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, chapter entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, text number 34.
Evam Nripanam Shitipada Jamanam.
Evam Nripanam
Akshohini bi parivritta tejasam.
Akshohini bi parivritta tejasam.
Vidaya vairam swashano yatanalam.
Vidaya vairam swashano yatanalam.
Mito vateno parato nirayuda. Evam Nripanam Shittipara Jammanam.
Evam Nripanam Shittipara Jammanam.
Akshohini Bi Parivritta Tejasam.
Akshohini Bi Parivritta Tejasam.
Vidaya Vairam Swashano Yatanalam. Mito vateno parato nirayuda. Evam nripanam shitiparak janmanam.
Evam nripanam shitiparak
Akshohini bi parivritta tejasam. Vidaya vairam swasano yatanalam.
Vidaya vairam swasano yatanalam.
Mito vateno parato nirayuda. Evam.
Evam.
Thus.
Thus.
Nupanam.
Nupanam.
Of the kings or administrators.
Of the kings or administrators.
Kshitibhara.
Kshitibhara.
The burden of the earth.
The burdens of the earth.
Janmanam.
Janmanam.
Born in that way.
Born in that way.
Akshohinibi.
Akshohinibi.
Empowered by military strength of horses.
Empowered by military strength of horses.
Elephants, chariots.
Elephants, chariots.
And infantry.
And infantry.
Parivritta.
Parivritta.
Being puffed up by such surroundings.
Being puffed up by such surroundings.
Tejasam.
Tejasam.
Prowess.
Prowess.
Vidaya.
Vidaya.
Having created.
Having created.
Vairam.
Vairam.
Hostility.
Hostility.
Shwasana.
Shwasana.
Interaction of the wind and the pipe plants.
Interaction of the wind and the pipe plants.
Yata.
Yata.
As it is.
As it is.
Analam.
Analam.
Fire.
Fire.
Mita.
Mita.
With one another.
With one another.
Vadena.
Vadena.
By killing them.
By killing them.
Uparata.
Uparata.
Relieved.
Relieved.
Nirayuda.
Nirayuda.
By himself without being a party to such fighting.
By himself without being a party to such fighting.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord was pacified after killing those kings who were burdensome to the earth. They were puffed up with their military strength, their horses, elephants, chariots, infantry, etc. He himself was not a party in the fight. He simply created hostility between the powerful administrators, and they fought amongst themselves. He was like the wind which causes friction between bamboos, and so sparks a fire. Purport. As stated above, the living beings are not factual enjoyers of things which are manifested as God's creation. The Lord is the genuine proprietor and enjoyer of everything manifested in his creation. Unfortunately, influenced by the deluding energy, the living being becomes a false enjoyer under the dictation of the moods of nature. Puffed up by such a false sense of becoming God, the deluded living being increases his material strength by so many activities, and thus becomes the burden of the earth, so much so that the earth becomes completely uninhabitable by the sane. This state of affairs is called dharmasya glani, or misuse of the energy of the human being. When such misuse of human energy is prominent, the saner living beings become perturbed by the awkward situation created by the vicious administrators, who are simply burdens of the earth. And the Lord appears by his internal potency just to save the saner section of humanity and to alleviate the burden due to the earthly administrators in different parts of the world. He does not favour either of the unwanted administrators, but by his potential power he creates hostility between such unwanted administrators, as the air creates fire in the forest by the friction of the bamboos. The fire in the forest takes place automatically by the force of the air. And similarly, the hostility between different groups of politicians takes place by the unseen design of the Lord. The unwanted administrators, puffed up by false power and military strength, thus become engaged in fighting amongst themselves over ideological conflicts and so exhaust themselves of all powers. The history of the world reflects this factual will of the Lord, and it will continue to be enacted until the living beings are attached to the service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, this fact is very vividly explained. Bhagavad Gita 7:14. It is said, "The deluding energy is my potency, and thus it is not possible for the dependent living beings to supersede the strength of the material modes. But those who take shelter in me, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, can cross over the gigantic ocean of material energy." This means that no one can establish peace and prosperity in the world by fruitive activities or by speculative philosophy or ideology. The only way is to surrender unto the Supreme Lord and thus become free from the illusion of the deluding energy. Unfortunately, persons who are engaged in destructive work are unable to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are fools of the first order and the lowest of the human species of life. They are robbed of their knowledge, although apparently they seem to be academically educated. They are all of the demoniac mentality, always challenging the supreme power of the Lord. Those who are very materialistic, always hankering after material power and strength, are undoubtedly fools of the first order because they have no information of the living energy. And being ignorant of that supreme spiritual science, they are absorbed in material science, which ends with the end of the material body. They are the lowest of human beings because the human life is especially meant for re-establishing the lost relation with the Lord. And they miss this opportunity by being engaged in material activities. They are robbed of their knowledge because, even after prolonged speculation, they cannot reach to the stage of knowing the personality of Godhead, the summum bonum of everything. And all of them are men of demoniac principle. And they suffer the consequences, as did such materialistic heroes as Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, and others. Omagyan, Tibadandasya, Gilanjana, Shalakaya, Chakshurun, Militam, Yena, Tasmai, Sri Gurave, Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam.
Dadati Swapadamtikam. Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Rama, Hare Hare. So, Prabhupada begins the purport by stating that we are not the factual enjoyers of everything in God's creation. So, false ego is defined by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, in different places. And Krishna says in chapter 16, what is chapter 16 called? Divine and demoniac natures. So, demoniac means asuric. Just like on Sunday at the farm, we had our Sunday feast, and a lot of children came. There's a big children's group came, very, very intelligent kids, and they asked some good questions. And one of them was asking about this personality, the devil, or Satan, or Lucifer. We have this personality in the Christian doctrine, like that. So we explained that this person does not actually exist. There is no Satan, there is no Lucifer. There is no devil. It is symbolic of the soul's rebellion against God. If we rebel against God, then that is demoniac, by definition. Krishna defines that as being demoniac. And as we've discussed previously, then in Satya Yuga, it is said that the demons and the devotees, they're on different planets. You see, like in the pastime of the demigods being attacked on their planet by the asuras. That's in Satya Yuga. So they live on different planets, and the asuras have to attack the demigods' planets. And then it says in Treta Yuga, the demons and the devotees, they are on different countries of the earth. Just like you'll see in the Ramayana, you'll see that Ravana was on a different country to Lord Ram, and they had to cross the ocean to meet. And then you'll see in Dwapara Yuga, you'll see in the Mahabharata, that the devotees and the demons are born in different families. So you have the Pandavas and you have the Kauravas. So they're in different families. And then it says that in Kali Yuga, the devotee and the demon are in the same body, in the same mind. So some mornings you wake up and you are the devotee, and some mornings you wake up and you are the asura, you are the demon. What is the definition of the asura? He is atheistic. Atheistic means, by definition, that one defies the... one is not obedient to God, or one defies the supremacy of God, or defies his order. And a devotee means one who is obedient to Krishna. So that is a devotee, someone who is obedient to Krishna. And someone who is demoniac, he is disobedient to Krishna. So we find that ourselves, we have both within us. Some mornings we wake up and we feel like being obedient to Krishna. Some mornings we wake up and we feel like disobeying Krishna. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he doesn't kill the demons as was done previously in the previous yugas. In Satya Yuga, Lord Nisringadeva appeared to kill the demons. In Treta Yuga, Ram appeared to kill the demons. In Dwapara Yuga, Krishna appeared to kill the demons. And in Kali Yuga, Gaunatai appear, but they don't kill the demoniac. They kill the demoniac tendency within the living entity. In other words, that personality within us, which is defiant or which is disobedient to Krishna, they kill that propensity. Gradually and slowly. How? By the process of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. by Sankirtan, by congregational chanting of the holy names, this demoniac propensity is destroyed within our consciousness. So, Krishna defines in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he says there are divine living entities and demoniac living entities. And he says, Ishwaraham, Ahambogi, Siddoham, Balavan, Suki. So he says that a demon is someone who thinks he is the Ishwara. Ishwara means he is the controller, and Bogi. Bogi means I am the enjoyer. So just like at the moment the Boga offering is placed before Krishna, it's called Bog. Bog means that which is to be enjoyed, or that which has not been enjoyed yet. That is called Boga. So Bogi means one who enjoys the offering. So as devotees, we are taught that we take the Bog and we offer it to Bhagavan. We offer it to Krishna with bhakti. So by offering the offering to Krishna, then Krishna is satisfied. He accepts the offering. So it is considered demoniac to enjoy the offering before it is offered to Krishna. None of us would do that. None of us would take the offering and start to eat it before it got to Krishna. That is considered demoniac. Even it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada explains, even to think about enjoying the offering before it is offered to Krishna, that is demoniac. Right? That is improper. There are examples where Madhavendra Puri, who was a pure devotee, he thought, I wonder what the sweet rice will taste like, which is being offered to Gopinath in Remuna. So he was thinking about the sweet rice, but not because he was thinking, I want to enjoy the sweet rice. But he was thinking, I wonder what it tastes like. I wonder what the ingredients are like in the sweet rice. I can take those ingredients and then I can learn to cook them for my Gopal deity. So it was actually pure devotion. It wasn't. But then he chastised his mind and he said, how can you think of enjoying the deity's offering? How can you think before it is even offered to Krishna that you will enjoy it? So he chastised himself like that. So a devotee will not think of enjoying the offering before it is offered to Krishna. It is for Krishna's pleasure. But then the deity, he understood that Madhavendra Puri had this desire. So understanding Madhavendra Puri's desire, then when the 12, I think it was 12 pots, when the 12 pots of sweet rice were offered to the deity, and then the Prajari went off the altar, when he came back to take the offering off, he took the pots, but the deity had taken one of the pots and hidden it behind himself. And then in the middle of the night, when the Prajari was sleeping, he woke the Prajari up in his dream, and he said, come to the deity room immediately, and get the pot of sweet rice which I've hidden behind myself. So the Pujari woke up, startled, went and took bath, went into the deity room, and looked behind the deity, and the pot of sweet rice was there. And the deity said, now go and find Madhavendra Puri and give this sweet rice to him, so he can taste this sweet rice. So then Madhavendra Puri was hiding in the market, he was sleeping, and the Pujari was walking around in the middle of the night in the market saying, Madhavendra Puri, Madhavendra Puri, where are you? So Madhavendra Puri came out. He said, you've been calling me? And he said, yes, this deity has stolen the sweet rice. He wants to give it to you so that you can taste it, so that you can understand which ingredients to put in it to offer to your deity of Gopal at Govardhan Hill. So Madhavendra Puri, he took the sweet rice, he ate the sweet rice, and it was like nectar. And then he kept the pot, and then he travelled to Jagannath Puri. And every day he was eating, even the pot, which the deity had kept for him, he was eating a little bit of the clay pot every day. You just break off a little bit of the clay pot and he would eat it, because it was so ecstatic that he'd been directly reciprocated with by Krishna. So then he began to eat the pot gradually. And then he travelled to Jagannath Puri, and by the time he got to Puri, all the devotees had sent messages from Remuna saying that this devotee is so pure that the deity has stolen sweet rice and given it to him. So by the time he got to Jagannath Puri, he was famous. And all the devotees were coming and saying, Madhavendra Puri, you are the devotee who the deity has kept the sweet rice for. But Madhavendra Puri, he was very humble. He would not take the credit. He did not want to be recognized. That's the nature of a pure devotee. But still, he had this desire to taste the sweet rice, but Prabhupada explains that we should not have that desire. We should not think before the bhoga is offered to Krishna that we can taste it or we can think about it even. You can't even think, oh, that looks nice. You can't even think, that smells nice, or you can't think like that because it's for Krishna, it's for his pleasure. Prabhupada, sometimes he came into the kitchen, the devotees were cooking for Krishna or cooking for Prabhupada, and sometimes, on a few occasions, Prabhupada came in and he put his finger in and he tasted it. Before it was even offered to Krishna, he put his finger and he tasted it in the kitchen, like that. So Prabhupada can do like that, but we cannot do like that. If you imitate, then you will be severely chastised by Krishna. So the principle is that we have to learn that we are not the bhogi. You are not the enjoyer. You've come to this material world because you're trying to imitate God. Prabhupada says this in the purport. Why have we come to the material world? Because we're imitating God. This is our psychology. Each one of us thinks we are God. And actually, this is our disease in the material world. We are God. We are the bhogi. It is meant for my enjoyment. This world is meant for my enjoyment. And we are the Ishwara. We are the controller. I will control everything to whatever extent I can so that I can enjoy everything in this world. So I'll get as much money as I can so that I can be perfectly happy and I can enjoy in this world. Siddhoham. Siddha means I am perfect. Whatever I think, that is perfect. And Balavan, I am strong. I will remove you if you try to oppose me. Balavan Suki, and I will be happy. This is demoniac consciousness. So a devotee is completely the opposite. A devotee doesn't think of himself, but he thinks of Krishna. And he is more happy than the non-devotee. The non-devotee tries to be happy by enjoying God's creation, by enjoying God's energy. But a devotee, he thinks that the Prakriti, it is meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. And a devotee thinks that he is Prakriti. In the material world, we all think we are Purusha. Purusha means I am the master, I am the controller. And everyone in the material world, whether you're male or female, you have Purusha Bhav. Purusha Bhav means I am the enjoyer. Men and women both have this. But every living entity is Prakriti. Prabhupada has explained this in the previous purport. Every living entity is meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. Krishna is the Adi Purusha. Krishna is the Maha Purusha. He is the supreme enjoyer. He is the supreme controller. And all of us are simply meant to be enjoyed by him. So Prabhupada explains that Krishna came to this material world and Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita in the beginning of the fourth chapter, he gives three reasons why he comes to this material world. Now, what are the three reasons why he comes? Beginning of chapter 4. To deliver the pious.
And also to attract all of us so we can go back to
Yeah, paritranaya sadhunam. Protect the sadhus. It's the main reason why Krishna comes, to protect sadhus, to protect the devotees. Second reason he comes is vinashaya cha dushkritam, to destroy demons. Krishna comes to do this also. And third reason, dharma samstapanataya. He comes to re-establish dharma, or religion, within this world. So Krishna, there are his three purposes for coming in this world. Now Prabhupada explains the main purpose why Krishna comes is sadhunam, paritranaya sadhunam, or to protect the devotees. Because he can destroy demons and re-establish religion through others. He doesn't have to do that personally. And as being explained here in this verse and in this purport, that to destroy all the demons on the earth, he just creates a situation in which they are all destroyed. He doesn't have to personally do it himself. Krishna doesn't have to personally go and kill all the demons, but he can just create friction. The Bhagavatam says, just like in the forest, in the summertime, sometimes there is friction between the bamboos, and then fire. And then suddenly there's a huge fire. So that's Krishna's arrangement, like that. That is the arrangement of karma within this material world. That is powerful enough to destroy demons, even the biggest demons. Just like 1983, down near our farm, near a little town called Dean's Marsh, which is just past our farm. Then it was a Wednesday in 1983, and it turned out to be called Ash Wednesday. And there were some men, and they had a sawmill, and they were, cutting the wood, and some sparks flew into the grass, and then that was it. Within minutes, the fire just took off. And that fire burnt from all the way from Dean's Marsh all the way down to Lawn, and then came all the way back up to Anglesey, and then turned around and went back towards our farm. If you see our farm, it's all black, all the trees are black. And there's a lake, a coal mine lake just behind the farm, and then everything was burnt all the way to the lake. So a massive area was burnt. So that is the arrangement of karma. That is the arrangement of higher forces. When demoniac people need to be destroyed, right? The arrangement is made, and then friction is created, and then they are destroyed. So Krishna doesn't have to do that himself. And actually, it describes when Krishna comes to this material world, he doesn't do that himself in his original Swayam Bhagavan form. In that form of Krishna in Vrindavan, he doesn't actually kill the demons. When he kills the demons, it is the Vasudeva feature within him. It is his expansion who comes and kills the demoniac personalities. Krishna himself never gets involved directly in that kind of activity. But he expands himself as Vasudeva, as his next expansion. And that Vasudeva feature, he kills all the demons. So when all the demons come to Vrindavan, like, who was the first demon who came to Vrindavan? Putana, then? Shakata? Then Shakata, then? Trinavata. Right. And then the big demons came, Baka, Pralamba, Arishta, Keshi, all the big demons came. One by one, they kept getting sent to Vrindavan. So then Krishna's Vasudeva feature, he expands and he kills those demons. The original Krishna does not expand, but the Vasudeva feature expands. So then Kamsa, if you look at each of the demons who came to Vrindavan, if you read the Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he describes that each demon represents a particular anartha, or demoniac quality. And by hearing about Krishna's pastime of destroying that demon, it helps to remove that demoniac quality within our consciousness. Now, what does Kamsa represent? Kamsa. Because he was sending all the demons. He was the biggest demon. He was sending all the demons. What does he represent? Yeah, he represents the sum total of false ego. He is like false ego personified, Kams. Kams means bell metal. Metal, very dull metal, like dull. Not a valuable metal like gold, but dull metal, like Kams, very dull, like that. He represented the sum total of false ego. Kamsa was extremely powerful. You have to understand, sometimes we read Krishna book and we just say, yeah, Krishna killed that demon, he killed that demon. And Prabhupada even says that usually Krishna would kill two or three demons before lunch. Every day. Every day, two or three demons before lunch, three or four demons before lunch. It was just part of his play. And it was easy for him. But we have to understand how powerful these persons were. Kamsa was so powerful that his city, Mathura, was attacked by Jarasandha. Jarasandha was extremely powerful. He was an extremely powerful demon. He was amazing like that. So he captured, Jarasandha captured one elephant, and that elephant's name was Kuvalayapid. Right? Very powerful elephant. This elephant was so powerful, it took 10,000 ordinary elephants to capture this elephant. 10,000 elephants would have to capture this one elephant. That's how powerful Kuvalayapid was. So Jarasandha marched towards Mathura and he got outside the city. And then he thought, okay, I'll attack Kamsa, I'll send Kuvalayapid into the city. So he sent the elephant, Kuvalayapid came into the city, and then Kamsa heard the elephant in the city roaring, and elephants, when they get disturbed, they're extremely powerful. So this elephant was there. So Kamsa came out and he saw Kuvalayapid, and Kuvalayapid attacked Kamsa, and Kamsa grabbed him and picked him up and threw him over the wall of the city. Right? Threw him back out, and the Kuvalayapid landed next to Jarasandha. So Jarasandha thought, I don't think I'll attack Kamsa. He thought, I'll make a union with him. I'll make some alliance. So he offered his daughters to Kamsa. So Jarasandha's two daughters were offered to Kamsa in marriage. So then they formed an alliance. So Jarasandha was very powerful, and Kamsa was very powerful. So they would send these demons, Baka, Keshi, Arisa. They were extremely powerful. I mean, extremely powerful demoniac personalities. So Kamsa himself, he kept sending these demons, but they kept getting killed by Krishna, by this little boy, 10-year-old boy. They kept getting killed. So then he thought, Kamsa thought, let me go and check out what's going on. Let me go to Vrindavan and see what's going on. So Kamsa came into Vrindavan. He was heading into Vrindavan. And then he got to the edge of Vrindavan. And then Purnamasi appeared, who was Yogamaya personified. She's an elderly gopi. She dresses in white. She has white hair. She's an elderly gopi. She's the guru of everyone in Vrindavan. She's the yoga personification of Yogamaya. So she saw Kamsa and said, what are you doing? And Kamsa said, I'm going into Vrindavan. I want to see Krishna. I want to see what's going on. You know, I keep sending all these demons, my associates, and they keep getting killed. He said, you can't go like that. You can't dress up like an emperor, like a king, and walk into Vrindavan. This is a cowherd village. And she took Kamsa and she put him into one kund and pulled him out of the kund, and he took the form of a gopi. So he said, now you can go into Vrindavan. Now you'll fit in Vrindavan. No one will recognize you, and then you can spy on Vrindavan. So as a gopi, he walked into Vrindavan, and then the other gopis saw him, and they said, who are you? We've never seen you before. You're a new gopi. And he was a little confused, because he'd never lived in a village before. And they said, what can you do? And he said, well, I can do different things. And they said, can you make cow patties? Can you make the patties, the cow dung patties, like that? They said, I can try. So they got him, all the gopis, they put him down, said, okay, make the cow dung patties. So the emperor of Mathura was sitting there, you know, making cow dung patties, you know. And he wasn't particularly enjoying the service. And he wasn't doing it properly because he didn't know what he was doing. So all the gopis came back and they saw him and they started to hit him around the back of the head. Hey, what are you doing? Hey, Sala. Just smacking around the back of the head. Hey, what are you? Huh? You don't even know how to, what sort of a gopi are you? You don't even know how to make cow dung patties? Get out of Vrindavan. This. So they beat him, boxed him up, and then they sent him out of Vrindavan. So he got back to the edge of Vrindavan, and Purnamasi got him, put him back in, put him back out, and she said, don't ever come back here again. Get out of Vrindavan. So what does that mean? That means if you have false ego, you can't enter Vrindavan. If you have demoniac qualities, you can't enter Vrindavan. You'll never get back in the spiritual world as long as you have demoniac qualities. Right? As long as you're an Aristasura or a Keshi demon or a Bakasura or a Palumba, you'll never get into Vrindavan. You have to destroy all your demoniac qualities. Lord Chaitanya will destroy all those demoniac qualities. Then we can enter Vrindavan. And ultimately your false ego has to be destroyed. You have to stop thinking you are the controller and the enjoyer. And you have to think that you're the servant of Krishna. Then you'll get back into Vrindavan. So, Krishna, he would kill all of these different demons, but it was always his Vasudeva feature. It wasn't him directly. So there was one very powerful demon. His name was Arishta. What form did he take? Arishtasura. Bull. Big bull, like that. So he attacked Vrindavan, and he came to Krishna, and Krishna was with the gopis. And then Krishna said, just wait, I will kill this demon. So his Vasudeva feature came. And this huge bull attacked Krishna. And as it ran to Krishna, Krishna picked him up, caught him, and then threw him a great distance. Then he landed on the ground. He was unconscious. And then he got up again. And then he was extremely angry and he attacked Krishna again. So when he came back and attacked Krishna, Krishna sidestepped him. And then he picked up his back legs. And then says, if you've seen in India, the dobi wala, right, gets the laundry and he goes, smashes the laundry, right? Smashes the cloth on the rock to get the dirt out. So Krishna took Arishta with back legs and went, just smashed him. And then after he was nearly dead, then he ripped off one of his horns and then he stabbed it into his side. This is our God. Our God is like this. Now, what does that represent? That represents that if you have demoniac qualities, Krishna will get into your heart and he will deal with them. That's what. So, watch out. The time is coming. If you can't give up those qualities, Krishna will help you. But the help may be different to what you think. You know, if you feel like there's someone in your heart going, that's Krishna. He's getting rid of the demoniac qualities. And at the end, then he takes the horn and just goes, right, once and for all, destroys it all, so that you can go back to Vrindavan. He's trying to help you go back to Vrindavan. If we can't get there by ourselves, then he will intercede and he will help. So, after Krishna had killed Arishtasura, then he went back to the gopis and he said, okay, Arishtasura is gone now. He said, now we can dance. We can have Rasa Leela. Because I've killed Arishta. And the gopis, Radharani and the gopis, they said, we're not going to have anything to do with you. Because you have just killed a bull. The personification of Dharma or religion. So we're not going to dance. We're not going to touch you. You have to purify yourself. You are impure. You've committed a great pap. And Krishna said, oh, really? He said, how do I have to purify myself? And the gopis said, you have to bathe in every holy water in the universe. Then you'll be pure enough to touch us. So Krishna said, no problem. So Krishna put his heel into the ground and pushed out a small bathing place with his heel. And then he called all of the holy waters in the universe. So they all appeared. Jamuna Devi appeared. She offered pranam to Krishna. She entered the water. Right then, Ganga came. She entered, and all the holy rivers. And the gopis were sitting there amazed. All of the holy waters of the universe came, and they entered into the water. So then, Krishna, he took his bath, which then became Shama Kund, right? And he got out, and he said to the gopis, he said, now I am pure. But unfortunately, all of you are impure, because you've sided with a demon. So if you want, you can bathe in my kund, and you can also become pure. Radharani said, we will not bathe in your kund, because your kund is full of pap, full of sin, because your sin has been cleansed. So we will have our own kund. So all the gopis, they broke off their bangles and they began to dig a kund. And in a short time, they built a little kund. So a few years ago, every 20 years or so in Vrindavan, they drain out Radha kund. You may have seen on the internet. So they drain Radha Kund, and then there's one small kund in the middle, which is called Kanchana Kund, which is that original kund, which the gopis made with it. So then, the gopis, after they made this kund with their bangles, they made a big line to Manasi Ganga, which is about 12 kilometers away. Not 12, about 6 kilometers away. So then, all the gopis made a big line. They began to get water from Manasi Ganga, which is non-different from the Ganges in Vrindavan. And they pass the pots all the way back to Radha Kund, and they begin to fill up Kanchana Kund, Radharani's little kund. But Krishna, he could not tolerate seeing the gopis working so hard and perspiration coming on their brow. So then Krishna, he indicated to the holy waters in his kund, he just indicated, he said, go into their kund. So then they all broke over, and then they stood in front of Radharani, and they said, it would be our greatest fortune if we would be allowed to fill our waters into your kund. And Radharani, she smiled and she looked at Krishna and she indicated, it's okay. And then all the waters went in there. And that was Radha Kund. So that's how Radha Kund and Shama Kund manifested. So it is not that when Krishna comes, he directly kills the demons. Right? The Swayam Bhagavan form does not directly do it. It is the Vasudeva feature. It is his expansion who kills all the demoniac personalities. So Krishna's main purpose for coming in this world is to protect the devotees. Paritranaya sadhunam. Sadhu means devotee. So Krishna comes to protect the devotees. So how does he protect the devotees? Right? He protects the devotees by performing his pastimes, and his pastimes are recorded in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And through the Srimad Bhagavatam, we associate with Krishna. Prabhupada says at the end of the third chapter in the first canto, He says that by hearing of Krishna's pastimes in the third canto in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says that you will get all the benefit of directly associating with Krishna. You can get all the same benefit of directly being in Krishna's association just by hearing Krishna's pastimes in the Bhagavatam. It is non-different. It is just as powerful. So this is how Krishna protects us. He brings us back to the spiritual world. So we have to absorb ourselves in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You have to become absorbed. Absorb your consciousness. Prabhupada, his main service to us was to translate the Srimad Bhagavatam. That was his main service. He considered that his main service. And Prabhupada would sometimes say, if I have one criticism of my disciples, it is they do not read my books. Prabhupada put so much effort into reading these books, into translating these books. And it is our service to study them and to absorb ourselves in them. And by absorbing ourselves in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we will associate directly with Krishna. And that is the perfection of our life, to associate with Krishna, become fully Krishna conscious, and to leave this body. And if we have overcome all of our demoniac qualities, we will go back home, back to Godhead at the end of this life. So this is the process. If we take it seriously, then we can leave this world once and for all, and we can go back to the spiritual world, where there is no birth or death, where there is no old age or disease, where there is no fire, where there is no sunlight. That Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. This place is self-illuminated. It is a spiritual world. Hands up if you would like to go there. Then you better get pretty serious. If you want to go there, you have to get serious. My spiritual master was having prasadam in Dallas a number of years ago with some of his disciples, and he looked at one of the pictures on the wall of Krishna and he said, if you want to go to that pastime, you have to become serious. You can't just enter the spirit. It's not easy to enter the spiritual world. Just like on Sunday, at the Sunday feast, we were saying to the guests, it's not easy to get into the White House. Not easy to get into the White House. You can't just walk into the White House. You know, fly to Washington, just try to walk into the White House. You can't just walk in. Right? And if you want to get to the Oval Office, right, where Barack Obama, where he, that's his inner chamber, you can't just walk in. No, hardly anyone gets in there. How do you think you'll get to Vrindavan? Vrindavan's harder to get to than the White House, right? You have to become serious in Krishna consciousness. It means the quality of your japa has to improve a lot. You have to learn to stay awake when you're chanting. That's the first challenge. Right? You have to develop nam ruchi. Right? You have to develop a taste for chanting the holy name of Krishna. You have to develop Vasudev Kata Ruchi, Bhagavatam says. There must be a taste developed for hearing about Krishna. Then you can go to the spiritual world. Where if you die and the only thing you want to do is hear and chant about Krishna, then you can go to the spiritual world. What do you think everyone does in the spiritual world? They hear and chant about Krishna. Prabhupada says Mother Yashoda is churning butter. And what is she doing? Yashomati nandana braja jana ranjana gokula ranjana karna. She's just singing about Krishna. That's all they do. Right? Absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna. So if you want to go to the spiritual world, you have to get serious. So hands up if you want to go to the spiritual world. Wow, pretty serious group. Okay, so we'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments on what we have discussed? You had a point, Ross?
What does Arishta represent?
Arishta. Does anyone remember what he represents? Arishta Sura. Arishta. I can't remember.
Anybody would tell me, now you've got to watch it. I have to go and research it.
Yeah, I can't remember which one Arishta represents, but he was one of the last ones. He was very powerful. Kamsa was sending the really powerful ones at the end. And Krishna just kept killing them all. So. Any other question or comment?
How do you control anger?
You control anger by controlling lust. Because anger is the byproduct of lust. So if you can control your desires, your material desires, then you can control your anger. If you're angry, that means you're frustrated materially, like that. So if if you control material desires, then automatically you'll stop anger, like that. If you're angry, it means there's material desires which are unfulfilled. Best way to deal with anger is that you minimize it. There's one pastime, Satyaki, who was Krishna's commander-in-chief in Dwarka. Balaram and Krishna, they were traveling. In the middle of the night, they camped. So the first 2 hours of the night, then Satyaki, he guarded the camp. And the second 2 hours, Balaram guarded the camp. And then the third 2 hours, then Krishna guarded the camp. So they were taking rest, and then one big Rakshasa, he came. And he said to Satyaki, he said, I'm going to eat your friends, Krishna and Balaram, and then I'm going to eat you. So Satyaki jumped up and he began to fight with the Rakshasa, and they fought for 2 hours. And the Rakshasa just got strong. The more Satyaki fought with him, because when you fight, you're angry. The more he fought with him, the stronger the Rakshasa got. And after 2 hours, the Rakshasa disappeared. And then Satyaki was so tired, he just fell asleep, and then Balaram, it was his shift. So then the Rakshasa came back and he said to Balaram, I'm going to eat Krishna and Satyaki and then I'm going to eat you. So then they fought for 2 hours. And the more Balaram fought against the Rakshasa, the stronger he got. And then at the end of the 2 hours, the Rakshasa disappeared, and then Balaram just fell asleep, and then Krishna got up, it was his shift. And then the Rakshasa came and he said, I'm going to eat Balaram, I'm going to eat Satyaki, and then I'm going to eat you. And Krishna laughed. Krishna said, that's very funny, that's very amusing. You're going to eat me, and then you're going to eat these two. And then the Rakshasa became very angry. He said, no, I'm going to just destroy you. And Krishna just began to laugh more. He said, that's hilarious, like that. So the Rakshasa became weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker, and then he became so small, he became just like a little tiny Rakshasa. And Krishna picked him up and he just tied him up in his like dhoti and his kurta, just tied him up in the corner and he just put him there. In the morning, Balaram and Satyaki woke up and they said, last night, while you were sleeping, I had to fight this Rakshasa for 2 hours. Right? And Balaram said to Satyaki, he said, I had to fight him as well for 2 hours. And the more I fought him, the stronger he got. So Krishna undid his, then he said, this guy, you're talking about... So then who was that? That was anger, right? Because the more you fuel anger, the bigger he gets, right? And if you decrease his power, the smaller he gets. So that's the best way to deal with anger. That's the best anger management. You just laugh, right? In other words, you just lighten the situation. You don't have to take life so seriously like that. In the respect that you don't have to... The things we get angry about, most of the time, they're not worth getting angry about. If you look at the bigger picture or the greater perspective of things. Any other question?
I think in Bodhisattva's class, Bodhisattva Guru's class, he mentioned meditating on the bodily creatures of the Lord. And you mentioned that lust, if you want to help control lust, that you meditate on the Lord's eyebrows. Is that right?
Yeah. Any other question? All glories to the iPad. Good. Any other question? Okay.
Krishna seems like a hero. Like in the movies, we have hero and villain. So all these demons are villains. Krishna is hero.
He is the Adi Purush. Adi means the original hero. He's a hero. That's who he is. That's his nature. He's a hero. It's like when he fights with Kaliya. He gets up in the tree, in the Kadamba tree, right? And first, before he jumps off to fight Kaliya, he dresses himself nicely, right? He tightens his belt, puts his flute in his belt, tightens his belt, adjusts his turban, right? Makes it all nice. Right? And then he looks at his friends, right? And then he hits his arms, right? And then he says, okay, now I'll fight. So he's the ultimate hero. Even when he's fighting, then he's beautiful and stylish like that. And it says in the Bhagavad Gita that when he was speaking to Arjuna, he had a garland on. Right? When was the last time you got into a boxing ring with a garland on? Now, you don't go and fight someone with a garland on, but that's what Krishna's like. He dresses very beautifully before he attacks the enemy. So he's the ultimate hero. He makes it look very easy. Describes when he was fighting, later in the 10th canto, he was fighting one demon. I can't remember. It might have been Banasura. I can't remember. So he was flying on Garuda to Banasura city, and Rukmini was sitting behind him, and they're flying on Garuda. So he's flying in like that. And as he was coming in, like on the turrets or like on the corners of the palace or the castle, they began to shoot weapons at him. They were all firing weapons. So as he was flying in, right, Rukmini was behind him. He had his bow, Shanga, right, and he's shooting arrows at everyone as he's flying. So he's the ultimate hero. You know, there's no one more amazing than him. When he fights, he's the greatest fighter. When he dances, he's the greatest dancer. When he sings, he's the greatest singer. Like that. Everything he does is the topmost. Like that song. What's that? You have to read the commentaries. Have you read the commentaries? If you read that, you'll learn about it. Okay. Any other question or comment? Okay. Srila Prabhupada Keith?
Yeah.